We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producer for our program, Harriet Williamson, Kyle Mabry, is at the controls this morning. Here on our show, from time to time, on a pretty regular basis, we like to have physicians because we know that people always have questions about their health. So we have different kinds of doctors and give listeners the chance to ask questions. Now, there are also a lot of people who are taking prescription medications and have questions about those. Questions like, well, what is this drug for? Why am I taking it? How should I take it? How would I know if I was having side effects? And there are always new drugs coming along and a lot of news about prescription medicines. We know people have questions about those things too. So from time to time, to try to get some answers to those questions and give you a chance to get your questions answered, the guy that we turn to is Jim Rybacki. He is a pharmacist by his academic training. He's president of the Medicine Information Institute. He's author of The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs. This is a reference guide on prescription medications that was produced as a paper book every year for quite a few years. He also now is editor of the Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs.com, which is a website that provides a wide array of health information for people who are trying to manage conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis. So there's good information there. For a wide range of issues. Some of the information there is available for anyone, so you can just go to the website and look. Some of it is available there kind of on a subscription basis. I think his interest in going to the web was to try to have more information available and have more current information available. So you can take a look at that. He's also interested in heart disease. He's a National Advisory Council member for the Mended Hearts. So what we'll do this morning is to try to talk about some things that are new, but the main reason for having Dr. Rybacki here on the show is to answer questions. So if you have a question about medicine that you're taking, can be a prescription medicine. Sometimes people do have questions about over-the-counter medications or supplements. You can give us a call, and I know that he will do his best to help you out. So 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to write your email to us, we can take that to will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, Dr. Rybacki, hello.
Well, hi. How are you? I hear you're freezing in Chicago.
It's chilly. It's a little cold for this time of year. It is winter, but it came kind of suddenly. It's a little shocking.
Oh, I was talking to Harriet, and zero came up. That's low.
It's brisk. It's brisk. So we just bundle up and put on our long underwear and hope for the best.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, anyway, I'm glad you could be with us once again, and I'm
hoping
that we'll have a number of questions from people. I would start out talking a little bit about a new medication for cholesterol. And I think this is something that you talked a little bit with Celeste about not long ago when you were attending a Heart Association conference.
Yes.
And this is something that people perhaps have heard about and may be very beneficial for people who have high cholesterol. And one of the things that's really nice about this is that it appears to raise the good cholesterol, and we really don't have many things to do that.
The interesting part, I actually have on my desk something from 1993 that was a prescription drug education initiative in Maryland. And looking here, there were some lipid sort of lowering agents, fibrids and fibrates and some other things like that, some Questran, some niacin, which is probably beyond exercise. And I do want to say, if you get the right amount, talk to your doctor. Exercise can be a drug in raising HDL.
Mm.
And beyond that, you have some statins, and obviously the targets with those, Lipitor, Crestor, Livalo, those are targeted at LDL, bad cholesterol, low-density lipoprotein. And so this new medicine, which is still investigational, belongs to a new family, and I'm sorry to say this in public, but It's a cholesterol ester transfer protein inhibitor. So we're going to have to learn how to say CETP.
That's easy for you to say.
And yeah, well, I tell you, the adventure continues. But the effect of this, which is very, very interesting, there was an original member of this family that was investigated and presented a couple of years ago at the American Heart Association meeting called torsetrapib. And while it looked like it increased high-density lipoprotein, the good stuff, it also had some side effects that ended it as a medicine. And the interesting thing now is that anacetrapib, boy, let's say that again, anacetrapib, all of these will probably end in pib as the family grows a little bit, inhibits this particular CETP. And the effect of that is to increase good cholesterol. Now, what does that mean? What that means is that instead of wandering around your arteries, going, well, I think I'm going to clog this up, it's going to be transported by the increased good cholesterol to your liver, and your liver can make very interesting things with it. The other part, which I always hesitate to talk about, but the other part that may happen is we may be able to get some reversal of existing artery clogging by increasing the HDL to the extent perhaps into the 90s or so. Typically for women, that goal is about 50, greater than 50, and for men, greater than 40. But if we can get this into the 90s, we may have some reversal of disease. Absolutely amazing.
Well, that would be a great thing, and particularly now, you know, for people who do have blockages of their blood vessels, there are mechanical means for dealing with that, but that means surgery. And, you know, if you could, by dealing with diet and lifestyle and possibly with medication, if you could get it to reverse that way rather than having to go into their veins and drill them out, that would be much better.
So mechanical means, my friend, you get a catheter shoved up your femoral artery.
Yeah.
And since I've had that, I want to tell you it's not the best day. But what happens is you actually put a catheter up there, and this is when we get a stent after an angioplasty. So the angioplasty is a balloon that kind of pops up that clogged artery and breaks the plaque up. And then the stent is sort of like a support structure framework that goes in there and says, hey, you're not clogging up. And some of them have some medicines on the inside to help prevent reclogging that can happen afterwards. Very interesting stuff, though.
I want to talk some more about statins, but I'll tell you, we have a caller who is waiting, and rather than make them wait, we'll get right to their question. And
let's,
it's someone
that
who is in Champaign, and line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, a question for you, and I hate to change the subject.
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead.
But can a person take over-the-counter, I have a bad situation with heartburn. I have heartburn on a daily basis, and I'm a diabetic as well. And so doing any type of operations, like they have something called like a gastro type of surgery that they could do, since they won't do that, I have to take over-the-counter heartburn meds. Is it safe to do that on a daily basis?
So the question with that, looking at it, these are probably, are you taking a proton pump inhibitor like Prilosec, something that ends in soprazole? Tell me which one you're taking.
Actually, Prilosec is about the best thing that I've ever taken out there, but I have so many meds I can't afford it anymore. So I take like a Home Life type of acid reducer that you could buy at County Market.
Okay. Now, I understand that. Now, one of the things that you may want to look into, there are some pharmaceutical company-related, based on income, medication programs that can help you. That's something you want to do. Search on the web for that. Look at the one that you were taking before that helped. But going back to the therapeutics of this, basically what you're doing with an antacid is fighting, your body actually makes hydrochloric acid, which is the same stuff you would see in a chemistry lab you may have seen in high school. And it's really, really erosive. And so with an antacid, while it's cheap, they're often calcium carbonates or other combinations of things that basically reduce the effect of the acid, but they don't stop it. So you're treating a product that's very nasty for your stomach once it's already been released. Now, the other two categories of medicines that can help with this kind of excess acid secretion are the H2 blockers, which are like Zantac, ranitidine, those over-the-counter kinds of medicines, and they work on a slightly different way to lower the amount of acid, so they're a little bit better. And the one that you're talking about that you're having trouble affording is actually a proton pump inhibitor. And so the big thing there is that they actually shut down acid. Parietal cells, funny name, but they actually are the ones in your stomach that make acid, and they say, hey, don't do that. So if you can find a way to afford the other drug, that might be a better way. Now, in general, the first question should be, why are you having so much acid?
Yeah.
And, that's a go to your doctor and say, we got to figure this out. And if you look at the most widely prescribed medicines, actually proton pump inhibitors are in the top 10 because so many people have acid reflux. Part of it's stress. Part of it may be other things, though. But rather than treating it on your own, have you talked to your doctor about it? You need to do that.
Okay.
That's a big one.
All right. And maybe it's also worth checking out. It might still be a problem, but there are generics versions of what is the same drug as Prilosec. So
that's exactly right, and available over the counter. But again, that's something in general. If something's persisting, even though you can treat it for yourself, that can be a prescription for disaster because undertreated or underevaluated, part of that acid secretion and the challenge is certainly with ulcers, it can actually be an infection by a bacteria called Helicobacter pylori, and that needs to be treated with an antibiotic in combination. So very different thing. Don't just treat the symptoms.
Okay. That's good to know.
You betcha.
All right, thanks. Hope that helps.
Other
questions are certainly welcome. You'd like to talk with our guest, Dr. James Rabacki. He is a pharmacist. He is the president of the Medicine Information Institute, which is located in Easton, Maryland. He's the author of The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs and also of Medicines and Your Family. He is the editor of the website EssentialGuideToPrescriptionDrugs.com. And if you have questions about medicines that you're taking, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Just going back to statins for a moment, just on the program not very long ago, we had a local cardiologist on the show, and a listener called in and talked about some of the experience that he'd had with statins. His doctor had determined that his cholesterol was too high and that he needed to be on these medicines. And so he would take the statins, and he could take them for a while and tolerate them pretty well. But eventually he started to have some problematic side effects, and they were really serious muscle pain and just overall exhaustion.
Ouch.
And the doctor said, yeah, that can be a side effect some people have with statins. And, one of the things he said, well, it's possible that by trying a different medicine that might help. But what kind of advice can you give for people who have cholesterol issues but don't tolerate statins?
The amazing thing, part of what you get from going to the American Heart Association meetings and actually being there, I actually attended a lecture on this from a guy named Chris Cannon, who's a really tremendous cardiologist at Harvard, and the focus of this was, what do you do when people can't tolerate statins? So to talk a little bit about complementary medicine, one of the things that may have a benefit is ubiquinone or CoQ10. I actually talked about this in Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs update on cholesterol, and some people who supplement with that, about 100 milligrams of a well-designed, well-formulated product, have some benefit in reduced possibility or probability of muscle pain. The other things that are interesting, looking at the drugs themselves, yes, you can potentially switch families of statins, even within the statin family, switch medicines. And sometimes that works. That actually happened with me, which was interesting. Started with Prevacol and ended up with a different medicine now and haven't had a problem since. The other thing that came up, and it should be discussed with your doctor, is 3 times a week dosing to see if you can tolerate that and see how the cholesterol changes, if it's enough, if you will. because you need to treat this to target and get it low enough to avoid clogging of the arteries. The other thing, two other things that are actually interesting, there are some cholesterol resins, cholecystokinin is one of them. Niacin probably has a role in this, and they can help a ton in reducing it. Now, the most interesting thing that I heard in this lecture was from a different colleague, and this is still anecdotal, but it looks like some aspects of creatine supplementation may help with this myositis. And actually, this gentleman who was there presented a brief summary of 10 patients who had had definite problems with this and actually eased this with some creatine supplementation, very lower dose of it, but seemed to have an effect. I think this needs to be studied, but very, very interesting.
All right, let's take another call. And this is someone who is in Morton Grove, which is sort of up in the northern part of the state. It's line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning to both of you.
Yes.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask a question. It's kind of a two-part question, but it's both related. The first part of it had to do with the reflux effect. If you have a hiatal hernia, the relationship there, and also have you heard or in your readings of where these issues of reflux, hiatal, somehow affects the shortness of breath in individuals?
Now, that's interesting. So basically, a hiatal hernia happens when part of your stomach bulges upward. Are you having reflux? What do you have it?
Yes, the reflux, yes. Mm-hmm. I had initially tried the Zantac and was asked to move on to Prilosec.
And so what you're taking now is the most potent acid reducer. Again, when you look at those Zantac and those kinds of things, those are histamine effects. The other ones are actually working on the cells that make the acid. And so the question there, have you talked to your doctor about what's going to happen with this? You know, a lot of times people who have a hiatal hernia sometimes don't have symptoms. When it's symptomatic, then the question is, I guess, first, pain behind your breastbone can be challenging in the sense of differentiating that from a heart problem. Mm-hmm. And so was this actually something you talked to your doctor, and what'd you do?
Well, I think the first thing that happened was the getting away from the one medication to the Prilosec.
Uh-huh.
And after a couple of weeks of that, once a day, I'm now up to twice a day now from the physician. And he's talking in terms of maybe an endoscope, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, you are actually taking a look down there and getting an endoscopy. And so the other question, and what sometimes can happen, if you change your eating habits a little bit, he or she may have already talked to you about having several small meals instead of two or three meals. Did that come up?
Not as yet, no.
Okay, that's something you may want to talk to him about. That's usually a non-prescription strategy. And then after you eat, definitely wait 2 or 3 hours before you lay down. And I'm not sure if you're a late-night snacker. Sometimes my wife has these darn cookies in the house, and I turn into one.
Yeah.
But late-night snacks in general aren't a good idea because they make that acid start again.
I see.
And then three particular foods, obviously spicy foods, tomatoes and oranges can have a lot of acid in them, do have a lot of acid in them, so you should probably minimize those. And chocolate, my wife would hate me for saying that, but chocolate, mint, and alcohol in general can make what we call GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, worse. If you smoke, please quit. Losing weight can sometimes help a little bit, too.
Yeah, and I thought it was a stretch, but it was suggested that maybe the acid reflux and it's somehow because of the area that affects in the lower esophagus that it could somehow for some sort of a nerve connection might play a role in shortness of breath.
That's possible, some of that irritation. Of course, the other thing, looking at this, in severe cases, if there's not a response to the medicine, then sometimes you have to have some surgery to pull the hernia kind of back into the belly, and, you know, that eases the whole groups of things. But it sounds like your doctor's taking a conservative approach, and certainly an appropriate one, going from different medicines to slightly more potent medicines. And, again, if you add those other things on there with the smaller meals and avoiding what I would call triggers for that, that may help you a little bit further.
Yes, yes. I think those are easy enough to make an adjustment. And I'll be happy to follow that, you know, in hopes of getting some relief, yeah.
But, again, you know, if it doesn't, certainly the key thing to do is to go back to your doctor and say, well, okay, you know what? I've taken these pills. I would call that adherence compliance, exactly as you said, and you got to make sure you're doing that as well.
I am.
And if you're doing that, then the issue may again be follow-up and possibly further activities in that, and sometimes that surgery just needs to pull that back where it should be.
Okay, well, that's kind of the more drastic situation.
Oh, without doubt. And, you know, the question always is, gee, how can we manage this medically and, you know, with medicines and maybe some lifestyle changes and certainly minimizing the alcohol, trying some smaller meals. The other odd thing is, this is going to sound a little silly, but avoiding tight clothing around your belly, too, easing pressure on it may also help. That's, again, a simple clothing thing. I don't want to impact your wardrobe tremendously, but
maybe suspenders are in order here. I don't know.
There you, there you go. But you got to stay on top of this, definitely. And if you don't get relief after a more potent medicine, then very clearly it's time for a follow-up and go to some next steps.
Good. All right. Thank you for all your
thank
time.
Thank you. And I think also another thing that people have found helpful in addition to all the things that you mentioned, particularly if people are having issues with heartburn at night, is to elevate the head of their bed.
Yes, clearly.
Because when it comes to acid reflux, gravity is your friend, and you're going to have more problems when you're lying down than when you're standing up or even when you're slightly, and it doesn't take a whole lot of elevation of the head to get that effect.
Definitely true. The key, though, there is that you still have acid in a higher amount than it should be, and that's something where if it's a mechanical thing like a hernia, something like that, again, if it's persistent, you don't want to keep that going because that can lead to ulcers, as we know pretty well.
Yeah. Let me go back to you talked about a little earlier. We were talking about some of the issues that can come up with statin use.
Oh, sure.
And how to deal with that. And you said that there some people have found that it was helpful to deal with some of these side effects by using a supplement of the coenzyme Q10, the
CoQ10,
which is something that's available as a supplement over the counter. You go in places where they sell supplements and vitamins, and you will find it in probably a number of brands. And you said that, well, some people have found that it can be helpful. However, the qualification you used is one that was well-designed and well-made. And, see, that's an issue. And I think that with supplements, you know, various sorts of consumer outfits have taken particular supplements and they have bought a range of them, the same thing, just under different brands, and have found varying differences in quality from one to the next. So that gets to the question, well, how do you evaluate that as if you say you have four or five different brands of the same thing to choose from? How do you make your choice?
Key thing, identity, purity, and stability. Just like a prescription medicine, you certainly wouldn't use it if it was outdated. And if you look at your bottle of Crestor Lipitor, it's going to have a particular lot number and an outdate on it. And for natural products, the important thing is to look at standardized ingredients. And if you have some component of that on the label, that's very, very important. Because then you know it has X number of milligrams of active component in it. And that will not vary as long as it's on that label, lot to lot to lot. That's how you can help look at this and say, am I getting the same thing? And just like a prescription medicine, if you're going to decide on complementary care or if you're going to try to manage a medical problem with natural remedies, you need to make sure, just like a prescription drug, that you're taking it exactly as the label says. And you have to continue to take it to get the benefit. It's not a, well, you know, I took this and I'm fine. Well, no, you're not. it's an ongoing problem, it needs ongoing treatment.
Yeah, and I suppose it's also worth mentioning that there, if you were taking something that you're buying over the counter, you're making that decision to take that, and you also happen to be taking prescription medicines, that there is the potential for interaction, so it wouldn't hurt. If you don't feel like asking your doctor, well, you know, maybe then the thing is to do go march up to the pharmacist and ask him or her, say, look, I'm thinking about taking this. I'm also taking this. You see any problem with that?
You know, you don't even have to march up to the pharmacist. it's okay to walk up gracefully.
So you could stroll. And you could stroll up to the pharmacist.
However you get there, definitely. I think they're an underused resource, and certainly in the sense of drug information components and some of the drug interaction softwares that any pharmacy is going to have, they can look at that and say, oh, my gosh, for example, you wouldn't want to add this red rice yeast product onto your prescription statin because you're actually adding another statin to your existing statin. And what that means is that, in general, the higher the dose with statins, the greater a possibility, although it's still very rare, of having some muscle problems, some myositis, and that can be severe. If you look at doubling the dose of most medicines, that can increase the possibility of side effects. You got to be careful.
Yeah. All right. I think that our previous caller would just maybe like to ask a quick follow-ups, and we can do that, going back to Morton Grove. Yes, hello.
Thank you for that extension of time.
Sure.
I thought I may have heard a little bit earlier. Is there a role for antibiotics in the situations that I discuss with you at all?
Well, it's interesting. The possibility with that, two things. If you've got a hiatal hernia, then the probability is that's a mechanical thing. That's something where you're actually getting pressure and stuff's getting pushed up past a valve.
Uh-huh.
If you've tried all the other things, and there's, a greater acid content and or some ulceration, and that may be the question your doctor brought up about the endoscope and what would be called an endoscopy to actually go take a look, sometimes that's actually a bacterial infection. And you know, that's a reasonable question to ask your doctor about. Hey, should there be some combination for therapy for this, and should we go ahead and do that?
Oh, very good. Then I think I wouldn't have thought of that, so that's most helpful. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, we're midway through this part of Focus. Our guest is Dr. James Rybacki. He is a pharmacist by his academic training, and occasionally he's good enough to be here on the show to be a resource so people can ask questions. So we talk a little bit about news that has to do with prescription medicine, and there are always new things that are coming along.
Oh,
but also,
gosh, yeah.
It's an opportunity for people to call in and ask questions about medicines that they're taking. Jim is the president of the Medicine Information Institute in Easton, Maryland. He's author of The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs, which was published as a book for a number of years, and now is also editor of the website, EssentialGuideToPrescriptionDrugs.com, which has a lot of the same kind of information, plus a lot of other information on various kinds of conditions that people are living with. And so you might go there and take a look at it. Some information is just available there to anybody. Some it's available there as a kind of a subscription, but there could well be good information there which you would find useful if you have things like arthritis, diabetes, you're concerned about heart disease and other conditions like that. So you can take a look at that. And
there's also a weight loss section there, which actually kind of piggybacks onto our hernia there. Sometimes losing a little weight can help with that sort of that pressure in the whole sort of rounded abdomen mechanical aspect that may make that sort of reflux a little bit worse. And it's interesting. There was a new drug up for FDA review for weight loss recently. Mm-hmm. And I, on Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs, I honestly wasn't sure. They have been so tough in looking at benefits and risks for new medicines and oddly or perhaps just serendipitously, the way the reviews came up, there's always an expert panel. In this case, it's the endocrine and metabolic panel. You can find that at www.fda.gov and also at clinicaltrials.gov. But when you look at this, Contrave came up. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's an interesting combination, and the review itself looked interesting. because it's actually two FDA-approved medicines combined. One of them is bupropion, which we know is Wellbutrin, an antidepressant. The other one is naltrexone, which we see is Revia that can help alcohol problems. And it looked like this helps people lose weight. Relatively small company, Orexigen, and I think then Takeda got involved, but came up before the FDA, and the recommendation 13-7 was that this combination drug, which looks like it may give about a 5-10% weight loss, was recommended for approval. So it may be available as some therapy pretty soon.
And so what? How does it work? What does it do?
I knew you were going to ask me that. The interesting point is this is probably a brain chemistry and probably a satiation of appetite in a, what we would call a central mechanism as to how it does it. Specifically, have I seen that elaborated? No, but we will. So the mechanism of actions probably say, I guess I'm full now, sooner than you would have before. And so it also appears to avoid some of the other challenges. We know sibutramine or Meridia, somewhat of a more stimulant medication, worked in a different way. So there were a couple questions about some blood pressure and or some minor, what I would call CNS side effects. But the FDA said, well, you know what? I think we ought to go ahead with this. I mean, if you look at it, about two-thirds, that's more than 60% of the country is overweight. And I think we need, it's not a magic bullet, but I think we need a therapy to help get a little bit more on track.
Okay. Let's talk with another caller. We have someone now in Urbana, here where we are. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is about medication for orthoarthritis. I've had several flare-ups at different parts of my body. I seem to have arthritis in various places. And the last time was in my neck. It was very painful. I ended up taking several medications. I'm now down to just one that I take once a day. It's Endodolac at 400 milligrams. And I've been trying to stop taking that. And I guess I just want to know, is there any advantage to not taking the medication, even though the medication does give you relief? I guess I'm thinking in terms of in the future, if I'm in pain, it would be nice to have something that was effective. And now I just tend to be creaky and uncomfortable but not in pain if I don't take it. So I just wanted your opinion. You know, do you stay ahead of the pain or do you just try not to take it? The other thing is the doctor said at one point to take it as needed, and that always screws me up because I'm a good follower if I know what I'm supposed to do.
But when I
have to choose, I get all confused.
I see. Well, I think we all struggle with that a little bit. So let's, for our listeners, I think it's Etodolac. Is it E-T-O-D-O-L-A-C?
Yes, it
is. Yeah. That belongs to a broad family of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and that sort of works by reducing some hormones and chemical messengers that actually cause inflammation and pain in the body. And so the question about flares in general, did he or she tell you, doctor, this was an osteoarthritis? Put a label on it?
Oh, I don't remember. I beg your pardon. I know it's not rheumatoid arthritis. It's
that's where I was going with this because, you know, the question
it's not
that,
rheumatoid arthritis. No, it's the old getting old kind of arthritis.
Well, I have a left knee that is the same sort of friend with me. And as the temperature goes down, my level of, oh, that was my marathon knee sort of goes up. So some of the questions with this, I think, are if you're exercising periodically and you have a flare, or a lot of times we'll spend a lot of time on computers, and I certainly do, and I'll go, what happened to my neck? One of the easiest things in a non-pharmacologic sense can be, are you having good body mechanics when you're doing that? You know, it sounds relatively simple, but boy, I know a lot of physical therapists that actually make a living doing this, making sure that the keyboard is positioned well, that the monitor is at a height that doesn't really impact your neck. And so if you've looked at that and you're sure that something like that isn't going on, the next question would be, what makes it flare? And, you know, how does that work? And the simplest non-pharmacologic effect is actually a heating pad. Have you tried that?
You know what's worked for me more than that? Yes, that will help, but ice is always, it's awful to put on your neck, but it makes it feel better.
Ice is nice and heat is later.
it's awful for the first 30 seconds or 10 seconds or something, mm-hmm. but then it feels very nice. I guess my question is, about the medication itself. Uh-huh. Is there any advantage medically for me to continue taking one pill a day? And as I said, I normally feel just peachy with it. When I don't take it, I'm not saying flares, I'm just saying I just don't feel as comfortable.
No, I understand. And so,
is there any disadvantage or advantage? Should I continue to try to stop taking it on a daily basis?
Well, here's a couple thoughts. One of the first ones may be looking into, David and I were talking about that a little bit earlier, but a well-designed fish oil. Some people really swear by fish oil and helping with some of those aches and pains.
Oh.
And obviously
okay.
The other thing is chondroitin. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yes, I have tried that before.
And did that work?
Not noticeable effect, no.
Okay. And so then, did you try the fish oil?
I've not tried fish oil. I didn't know that was anything
it's
that worked for arthritis.
Yep,
I thought that was for other
think
things.
Of that, yep, they usually think about that in heart disease or vascular health. But there are some data saying, yep, this can ease some of those little aches and pains that crop up as we become a little more chronologically gifted. That may be something to try. And once you've had that and tried that for a month, then
mm-hmm.
what you might do is it sounds like you're a little concerned about the Otolac and taking it every day. Try taking it 3 times a week and then see in general if on that day when you're not taking it there's pain returning or not. And that's a good strategy to tell you, okay, if I have 5 or 7 pain-free days and I'm varying the medicine that I know helps, then maybe the fish oil is doing some good. That can be a way to find out. And then your other question, I think, is looking at, is it better to always prevent some inflammation than having some around? Well, in general, there's an inflammatory cascade, and there are some chemicals called interleukins and a bunch of other things that your body makes to say, boy, this hurts. Let's get some fluid around that. And the question is where it's cropping up as well. Is it in big joints, or is it where does it happen? You said there were flares.
I think the place that has hurt the most and given me the most trouble is in my neck.
Uh-huh.
Almost the upper neck. I've had physical therapy, and they tried an injection.
Uh-huh.
I guess
so, like a trigger point.
Did not work. Neither of those things were helpful. The only thing that really worked was a bunch of medicine they gave me.
No, I understand. And so maybe one other question, now that it sounds like this has gone on for a little time, might be a trip back to the doctor to say, you know, this is still continuing because it might make some sense to have a little closer look at your neck and see if there's something going on there, which may need to be dealt with a little more aggressively. But if it goes back to, looks like there's a pretty good x-ray here, there's some inflammation periodically. Once you've done the body mechanics to see if there's not something that's making that worse, then I would try that the fish oil approach with the Otolac as well and kind of vary that and then see when you get full week that's pain-free.
It sounds good. Okay.
Good.
Well, there is, other than all the inserts with the medication, there's no risks of taking it every day if I can't seem to.
Oh, you mean the Otolac? Well, in general, looking at possible side effects, any of the non-steroidal drugs can have an effect on your stomach and, that sort of taking aspirin or Motrin or something like that. There's a benefit to risk decision that comes with an effect on the stomach versus not taking it. So is it probable? It's possible, I think, is the way to do it. There are possible allergic reactions like anything. They can cause some stomach upset, as I mentioned, some constipation or diarrhea. But if you're not having that and your kidneys are fine, then that looks like a medicine that's helping.
Okay, well, you've given me some things to think about and some information that I appreciate. So
always food for thought.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
We have about 10 minutes left in this hour of focus with Dr. James Rybacki. He's president of the Medicine Information Institute. He's editor of the website EssentialGuideToPrescriptionDrugs.com. He's a pharmacist by his training, and it's something that he spends a lot of his time trying to keep on top of issues that have to do with prescription drugs, the ones that have been around for a while, the new ones that keep coming. And if you have questions, he'll see if he can give you an answer. We have a couple of people ready to go, and we will do as many as we can.
Okay.
The next is Urbana, and that's line number 3. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Hi.
I have a question about statins and myositis. If a person's taking statin and gets muscle problems, can they be any muscles? My son's doing this a statin therapy for very high triglycerides, and he's getting back spasms. And I was wondering, are any of the muscles, can any of the muscles be affected, or are there particular muscles?
Well, it's interesting. That comes down to how your muscles were built when you were an embryo. And in my understanding, that can happen with any muscles. The interesting thing with a lot of people, a frequent presentation is in the quads, the muscles above your knees, and sometimes the calves, and it feels like a cramping. But any kind of cramping or back pain, spasming, those sorts of things that happen, and the way I've characterized that in Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs is without explanation. So if you start taking a drug and you haven't been lifting the rear end of your car or helping David carry books back and forth to the studio, you know, whatever you might do that would stress you or strain you, then the question has to be, could it be the statin? And that's very easy to go back to your doctor, or for your son to go back to your doctor, his doctor, and say, well, you know, this started, and sometimes it happens a week, sometimes it happens a couple months after starting it. And so I think the fact that he's having an ongoing muscle problem, if there's not an explanation for it, then that's something to look to the statin about.
And in addition, he's taking flax fish oil. And my question is there much difference between flaxseed oil and fish oil?
Well, it's interesting. The controversy with flaxseed oil and fish oil, and looking at DHA and EPA, the components in there that are active, the argument in a lot of health food stores has been, well, the flaxseed oil avoids possible lead exposure that can come from quote-unquote natural fish, because we know there's some lead content, and depending on how it's made, some products, in my understanding, actually have minimal amounts of lead. That's probably the difference. In the sense of cardiovascular outcome comparisons there, I've not seen a combination, and as we know, fish oil actually helps triglycerides, so that's an interest. Is he taking a prescription one?
Yes.
Yep, and so looking at that, that makes a lot of sense in combination with the statin. In fact, I was going to suggest that if you hadn't brought it up.
Okay.
Absolutely. So the other question, back to, there's a creatine kinase test that your doctor can take a look at and actually draw some blood and see that, and that can be a marker for, is there, and myositis for our listeners is inflammation of the muscles, that can be a marker for some problems going on. And you want to, of course, catch that early, so probably should be something to follow up on pretty quickly.
C-R-E-A-S-I-N kinase?
Yep, C-R-E-A-T-I-N-E. Boy, you made me spell kinase, K-I-N-A-S-E.
Oh, yeah.
You bet.
Kinase. Okay, so have that test to see if, in fact, that is a factor in the muscle pain.
That's exactly right.
Okay, and does flaxseed oil lengthen the clotting time?
You know, it can. I've seen a little bit of data on that. Fish oil can as well.
Okay.
And so looking at that, if you're taking an anticoagulant, also ginkgo garlic and licorice can do the same thing. So you have to be a little bit careful adding those on.
Okay, thanks very much.
All
right, thank you. Let's go to Oakwood for another caller. Line 4. Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
I've got a question, or not a question, a comment about statins. I've taken statins for years and years and years, and they seem to give me problems with my muscles, and finally it got so bad I had to, I went to my doctor, and the doctor, he kept putting it off onto something else, and so anyway, I finally went to the emergency room, and they had the blood tests, and they called it PMR. Polymyalgia rheumatica. And that's what I have. And so it was, the doctor told me after I'd been diagnosed with that, that probably the statins wouldn't bother me. So I was on a low dose of prednisone to take care of that.
So, wait.
I went to taking the statins again, and I still had the same problem. And finally, I went back to my doctor, and I said, they ain't going to work again. So, anyway, from there on, he put me on Welchol and Zetia, which is supposed to work in your stomach or in your gut rather than your liver.
So what you've actually got, Welchol is cholecalciferol, and that's exactly right. That's having an effect on a completely different pathway.
Right.
And Zetia, or ezetimibe, is actually keeping, the cholesterol from getting in. And it's interesting. Had we had a little bit more time in a prior discussion with David and another caller, that's also one of those things for people who don't tolerate statins, what do you do? And depending on what the results are from that, one of the things that also came up in this AHA lecture that I attended was also considering adding some extended-release niacin for that.
Okay, niacin I had tried years before that, and it was just nothing but trouble.
Okay, now tell me about trouble, because trouble comes in different packages.
That's right. I tell you, when I look in the mirror, I look like I was on fire.
And you know what? I actually take it now. Niaspan, which wasn't available earlier, is an extended-release product, and it's by prescription. And that really minimizes that flushing. And the other thing that can minimize that flushing, if you don't have a contraindication or a reason not to be able to take it, is a full-strength aspirin. But still, despite my taking mini-dose aspirin and the Niaspan, if I run to a meeting, I am a red-faced man. And I just have to look at that and go, okay, it's the Niaspan. I'm Dr. Rybecki. Let's start the meeting.
Right. Well, anyway, I discounted that because that's one of the things the doctor told me before he prescribed the Zetia. He said, oh, you can take niacin. I said, no, I've been there and done that. Don't care for any more of it. So anyway, that's when he prescribed the Zetia.
Yep, and so that makes sense. And so the question then is making sure you get the cholesterol down to target, and, you know, generally that's less than 100 and less than 70 if there's some other risk factors. But got to stay on top of that, and it sounds like you've got a combination. That's something that I've actually recommended for a couple of patients who don't tolerate the statins, even after trying, you know, 2 or 3 days a week and trying to add on some other things with it. And again, the newest information with a small number of patients in an unpublished study, boy, have I qualified that enough, is looking at some creatine supplementation. And again, I'm interested in studying that, so we need to take a little better look at it. But sounds like you've got a combination that makes rational sense.
Well, I want to thank the caller. I'm at the point here where we're very short on time.
Oh, yikes.
I don't know. Well, maybe we'll try real quick with our caller on line 3. I don't know how complicated your question is, but maybe we can try. Go ahead.
Where does the time go?
Go ahead. Line 3 in Champaign.
Okay. For one thing, they do clearing out of pollutants in some of the fish oil, so you need to look for that.
Well, I agree, definitely.
The other thing is that I have a Barrett's esophagus, and I take Nexium, and I just had an endoscopy, and I am wondering if probiotics are a good thing for me to take.
Now, what are you looking to gain from the probiotics?
To restore the bad bacteria that's destroyed by the Nexium.
Okay, so the interesting thing with this is Barrett's esophagus, what did your doctor tell you about this? So it's basically the lower end of the esophagus that has changed. And so that can be sort of a chronic inflammation issue. And I've not seen data
adding on a probiotic, because Nexium actually works by interrupting the formation of acid, and so you would have a less acid in general environment. Is that what you're concerned about, not being able to have some acidophilus and things like that in your gut flora?
Yeah.
If that's the reason, that can make some sense. I've not seen data on outcomes in the sense of the the esophagus itself. I don't think that would change that. But if you're seeking to reestablish flora, that can actually make some sense. And we know probiotics actually have some benefits in some immune system stimulation. But again, let your doctor know you're going to try that, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Just maybe real quick, this may not be enough time to talk about it, but you can say a couple things about this recent study that shows that there might be some benefit of taking aspirin as a cancer preventive?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's always been some background data. The American Cancer Society, you can look at that at cancer.org, said, well, the data looks real early to say we ought to do that for a bunch of folks. And I think if aspirin came out today, it would be a prescription drug. So that's something that you need to talk to your doctor about, a benefit to risk. It looked like there very clearly was a benefit in preventing some kinds of cancer. Amazing in that sense, and we need to tease out the data some more. But I actually put that on Essential Guide to PrescriptionDrugs.com because it was pretty fascinating, and it looked like reasonably well-designed study, but we need more information.
Yeah, and of course people need to obviously be concerned about taking aspirin because of its potential gastric effects and also because it's a blood thinner.
Don't you say gastric. Let's talk about stomach and bleeding problems.
I'm trying to score some points.
You're doing well.
Well, we're going to have to finish up. People who would like to get more information on various kinds of health issues and on medicines, you can take a look at EssentialGuideToPrescriptionDrugs.com. That's the online site that's edited by our guest, Jim Rybacki. He's also president of the Medicine Information Institute, Easton, Maryland. And Dr. Rybacki, thanks very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Take a visit at www.lipid.org and ASPCOnline.org. There's some good balanced lipid information and also preventive cardiology there. I just joined both groups.
All right, that's great. We'll talk again soon, I hope. Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure. You bet.